On today's show, I'm talking to Karen Wright, who found herself on national TV at the grand old age of 60 on The Great British Bake Off, one of my favourite programmes. This made her look at life totally differently, and now she's actually having the best time of her life in her 60s. And it's something she wants to encourage other women to do, explore more of life's possibilities as they age. But before we get started, can I ask that you give us a follow on your podcast app or Instagram? Now let's get on with the podcast. Welcome to Retirement Rebel Life After 60. I'm your host, Siobhan Daniels. Join me on a journey to meet inspiring rebels who've redefined retirement. Together, we'll explore new passions, triumphs over challenges, and discover the vibrant possibilities of life after 60. This is about living boldly, not just aging. So are you ready to rebel? Last week, I chatted with Diane Watson. She's a financial advisor and author of the book, She Can Prosper. She shared with us her insightful thoughts on consumerism, happiness, and finding contentment beyond material possessions, something which I strongly believe in. She wants to break down the barriers to make financial well-being accessible for all women and give them financial empowerment. If you haven't heard it, I do urge you to give it a listen, and you can find it on any podcast platform or through my website, retirementrebel.co.uk. Thank you so much, Karen. It's so lovely to have you.
Thank you, Siobhan. I'm absolutely delighted, obviously, to be here. Thanks for having me along.
How did you end up on the Great British Bake Off? That'll be the question on everybody's lips.
The question on everybody's lips. It is quite an iconic show. I think it's a bit of a one-off, really, you know. And it is a long story, which I'm not going to give you the whole thing, but in a nutshell, I had been baking all my life, but very, very simple things. I've got maybe four core recipes that I'd taken with me throughout, you know, a good sponge cake mixture, scones, a bit of pastry, shortcrust, stone, scones. You see, straight into controversy. Scones.
All right, then I'll let you have that one.
And pastry, but only shortcrust. And a Christmas cake. I could do that. And I've just done this all my life. But as I got into my 50s, going up towards 60, I was actually thinking about the possibility of maybe doing something self-employed. I wanted to sort of branch out. At that point, I was working in France on campsites, but we'd got a lot of downtime in the wintertime. So I'd got some time on my hands, and I was thinking, my husband's, you know, a good 10 years and nearly 11 years older than me. And it was on his mind that he was wanting to think about retirement, but I didn't. So I was thinking, maybe I could do something. What could I do? And then one day I saw a Facebook post, actually, from somebody that I knew was not a baker, and it was beautiful cake. And I thought, wow, look at that. That's a thing of beauty. But she's not had any training. I know that girl. If she could do that, maybe I could. So that was the sort of start of my interest in seeing if I could decorate cakes, because I knew there was a lot of people out there could make a little hobby business out of that. So I started looking on the internet and everything and teaching myself basic decorating techniques and how to stack a cake and how to fill a cake and all that. But I didn't change the actual cake that I was decorating, because my interest was in the external appearance rather than
the baking,
anything fancy pants cake wise. Yeah, exactly. And my daughter sent me the link after a couple of years of this. My daughter sent me the link, I think, not seriously, because she would know that you would need to do lots more than I got in my repertoire. But she sent me the link for the application form. And I thought, well, I'm going to have a little look because it's interesting. I thought it'd be interesting to see, you know, what people, I don't know anything about TV shows, what do they need you to be able to do? And I opened up the link on my laptop and I was immediately faced with, like, tick these boxes. What can you bake and decorate? What can you do?
I wouldn't be able to tick any of them.
Well, I've got my four, haven't I?
Oh, yeah? Yeah.
And they were there amongst 30-odd other things that I've never tried or I even thought of trying. And it was one of those eureka moments, really, that I think we often get, or I've had quite a number, where I was just about to close the laptop lid and something shouted in my ear. It said, how hard is it, though, Karen, to teach yourself how to do all these things? because you've got 2 months before the deadline. 2 months. But that, I was inspired. I got what I call inspired action.
What I love, though, is that you say you were inspired to act. So many of us, and I was guilty of this sort of approaching 60, we self-limit. We say, oh, no, I can't do that. And I probably have just thought, well, I've only got 4, shut the laptop and not bother doing it. But you were actually inspired and went on to do it, didn't you?
I completely agree with you, though, about self-limiting beliefs. And, you know, we gather those up as we go through life from a very young age. You know, we hear, we see, we believe what other people say. And it's not necessarily truths, because I've got a story about that some other time. But no, I know what you mean. I thought, I'm going to have a go. I'm going to see. And I did them all over the 2 months. I was very disciplined. I worked really hard, and I don't want to make it sound as if, oh, it's a piece of cake.
I saw what you did there.
Yeah. I don't want anybody to think that I'll just breeze through that. It was a lot of discipline. But to be honest, I only tried all of those things once, and they all turned out okay. And you're right. A lot of people would look at that and think, oh, profiteroles, oh, they look, you know, when they're all assembled up, looking all glossy and beautiful. You think, oh, that looks so complicated. I would never be able to do that. Yeah. That is what we often think. I mean, how do we know? We don't try. Yeah. I tried. Well, voila.
Voila.
It was okay. Sent off the application with a lot more bullying myself up, shining my own, you know, star.
Yeah, yeah.
Telling them what an amazing person. Basically, I thought, there's 20-odd thousand people apply for this show every year. How are the researchers going to see Karen? How are they going to see 60-year-old Karen in Wakefield out of all that lot? I needed to sort of get them to hone it, their light upon me, and I managed it somehow.
Did you think at any stage, oh, I'm too old really at 60?
You know, I didn't. I have never really considered my age. I don't think I've been looking back on it, you know, knowing this podcast was upcoming, thinking about it. I thought, no, I think I've honestly always just forged ahead, never considered age to be a detriment to what I want to do, and still don't. Certainly not. Then, no, I just popped it in and I off it went into the ether.
You were the oldest person in the tent, though, weren't you?
I was. You know, I thought that might give me some sort of kudos.
Good, yeah. Old is good.
You know, it is good. And I was really pleased that I was. And we got Terry a few years younger than me, just a few years. And we bonded, you know, probably because we were like minds and things. But yeah, I was the oldest one in the tent. That was my accolade. On the Radio Times.
But do you know what? That will have inspired so many older women to give it a go, don't you think?
Oh, yes, I know it has. And I continue to blaze the trail for that. As you know, people are dead interested in the Bake Off. They're fascinated by it. And I get asked to go talk about the Bake Off regularly. And I use that opportunity. I didn't know when I came out of the Bake Off, fresh off, you know, it was all new to me. I'd never done any public speaking or anything like, you know, at all. So to be asked to go into places and chat and talk and things was, I didn't realise I was going to be inspiring. So people say, but I know it because I'm passionate. And I do know that the story and everything has empowered people to go forward and try different things. Not necessarily only baking, I'll say that. It could be anything, you know.
Yeah, but that's why I wanted you on the podcast, because this is a platform for just everyday women who find themselves doing things, who push themselves out of the comfort zone. You've never been given talks. And I know you and I now have become friends because we're both ambassadors for the Caravan and Motorhome
Club, right,
championing older women going out there in their vans and things. We'll talk about that a bit later. I feel passionately that there are so many women out there like us doing this. And I want this to be a platform where we can all chat about it and show that one day you're not on national telly, what next day you find yourself on national telly.
And then what do you do?
And you go out and talk about it.
Yeah, exactly. And you use it. I did. I mean, there's no script. You know, anybody who gets into that situation, like, for example, our group, there was 12 of us, and looking at the 12 now, there are people that are on the television every day out of our group. There are people in the middle like me who does do a bit of this, bit of that, you know, in our own localities in particularly, you know, I'm quite well known and quite busy. And there are other people who choose or chose not to take it further than that one experience. They wanted to go have a go at the baking on the tent, you know, and they've gone back and continued with the lives as they were, because obviously that's what they wanted. But I, of course, once having had a taste of this and realizing that I have gained so much from that experience, from pushing myself, not just, I mean, for one thing, I could bake. I never knew that. I never knew it. And, you know, if I hadn't done that little exercise that day, or those weeks, in fact, I would have gone to the end of my life and never realised that I have actually got some innate talent. And the question I ask myself and other people is, what else is there that I don't know I've got yet?
Yeah.
You see, there's so many more things that I'm excited about looking at. But going back to the tent, yeah, I took that experience and came off the show. And the first thing I have to say, though, there's one tiny little bit of a downer. We were told we would be introduced to agents, right? All of us, all 12 of us, you'll be introduced to agents. And me being my naivety for being in this situation before, I thought we were going to be literally introduced to physical bodies, you know, of agents, shake hands, and we'd be doing an interview. I would have my pick, I thought, of agents, you know. And lo and behold, that is not what they meant at all. They gave me a list of email addresses of agents and said, off you go, get in touch, you know, if you want to. I did want to. I emailed all of the agents and more that I found myself, asking if anybody would be interested in representing me. And the answer came down, none. No, nobody wanted to ring. No, I was shocked, you know, Siobhan.
Do you think, I'm just putting it out there, that your age had anything to do with that?
I asked that question because I could not imagine why. We're so full of beans, was I, at this stage, having had quite a successful run. I got further along in the show than ever I thought I would do.
What week did you go out?
I went halfway, which was week 5.
Brilliant.
And given that I've got very little actual experience behind me, that was quite a result. And I was very, very pleased.
Oh, I know what I want to ask you. Did you get a handshake from Paul Hollywood?
Hollywood handshake. It looked on one occasion that I thought, my mind little sideline in my head was going, oh, Paul's hand's coming. It's going. Because he was saying all the right words, you know. He likes the chocolate collar cake. He was admiring of it. It wasn't dry for once, you know. Oh, my goodness, it's hard to please. And I thought, oh, this is it. But no, it never did happen.
Is he as nice as he seems?
Paul is very funny. And nice, yes. I mean, the thing is about the judges, not the, you know, we've got, there's two judges, Paul and Trunel, we had. And they have got to be quite impartial, so they can't be chumsy wumsy with you, offset.
Right.
I'm sure, because obviously they can't be chatting to one and not everybody, so just go back to their trailers. But the other two, them, Noel and Sandy Toksvig, we had as our sort of co-hosting. They were really, really friendly, really friendly indeed. But back to Paul, he was pleasant. He was intimidating because I think he wants to be. He has that.
That's to get
stance.
The best out of you, isn't it, really?
Yeah, well, like, in a way it does. But what struck me, though, is very, very quick witted. And they don't always show all the, you know, they don't, what they film, you don't get to see everything. But from inside the tent, sometimes, you know, his quips, he was as fast as that. Very attractive, in my opinion. And that, again, is controversial. I meet a lot of people and that some say, oh, no, he's arrogant. But no, he was very, very nice to me.
I'm just going to interrupt for a moment to shamelessly plug my book, Retirement Rebel. It's published by Vertebrate Publishers, and it's my honest account of feeling broken in my 50s and finding my happy place in my mid-60s. I got rid of my home and possessions and hit the road in my motorhome for a roller coaster ride along life's adventures. I want it to help younger women not to fear aging and older women to grab life and run with it. You can purchase a copy in most bookstores and on Amazon. Right, now back to the conversation. So going back to your childhood now, I mean, we've sort of explored the fact that when you were 60, you were doing this. You're a fellow Yorkshire lass, aren't you? You were born in a mining town. Tell me a bit about your childhood and how the roles of women in those days, you know, when you were growing up, your mother and your aunts and family, how's it differed to now? Do you think that they would have seen themselves being on the Bake Off at 60?
Certainly not my grandparents, for sure. Obviously, my two grandmothers, one of them was born in 1881. And I'm not saying great-grandmother here, my actual grandmother. She had a lot of children, and my dad was one of the very last. So she was quite in her 40s, I think, when my dad was born. And my dad didn't have children until he was in his mid-30s. So by the time I was even born in 1958, that grandmother was in her late 70s. So she was a Victorian grandmother, really, you know. I don't think she'd even had a day trip to the seaside, to be honest.
So you were born in Wakefield. Was she born?
In Featherston. Featherston. I was born in Featherston. Yeah, I live in Wakefield now. It's very close, you know. It's only a few miles away. So Featherston's a mining town. It's very famous for Featherston Rovers rugby. And yes, that grandmother was, she was born in, I think, Pontefract, but my grandfather came up from Staffordshire when they set the mines up in the late 1880s. A lot of people migrated towards mines, and my grandfather on the paternal side was one. So his wife, my grandmother, was, well, she had 11 children and a very, very small house with one cold water tap and all those things. My mother's mother, She wasn't as old as all that, but she was very entrenched in, she was Welsh, that she came up here during the war and brought my mum and my mum's brother up here with them. And she was very for the chaps, for the men. And it was part of where she came from, the women in Swansea, the Boney Mine area, when there was a funeral, didn't even go to funerals. The women didn't go.
What, they weren't allowed to?
It was just, I don't know whether they were forbidden, but certainly. And, you know, this is up till quite recently, I remember this. So my grandmother, she was entrenched in that now. So she had two sons and a daughter, my mother being the daughter. And my mother is still here with us. She's almost 90, my mum. She's amazing.
Gosh.
Really is. I mean, she's inspirational. She passed her 11 plus, my mum did, as had her older brother before her. And they both were offered scholarships to quite prestigious schools in Wakefield. Quakes, Queen Elizabeth Grammar School. My uncle went. My mother passed her 11 plus to get a place at Wakefield Girls High School. She didn't go. Why didn't she go? She didn't go because her mother said, "We can't afford for you to go, Glenys. And anyway, you know, you'll be just getting married and everything and having a family. You don't need the education." My mother will talk about it now. She will tell you it thread through a needle. Of course, it influenced her, and it also influenced her attitude to me in a positive way, in that my mother has always...
She wanted to do the opposite.
Yes, 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 she did. I mean, it was marred by a difficult choice. You know, my mum's marriage to my dad was not great, so things went a little bit pear-shaped, really. But all through it, and through my life, and still now, my mother encourages me to continue to go and do. You know, she'll say to me now, I'll say, "What about your mum? You're on your own now." She'll go, "Don't worry about me. You get off. Get yourselves off in your caravan or your motorhome. Get yourselves going. Enjoy yourselves. Do it while you can. You know, I'm all right. You don't need to worry about me." You know, she said, "I've had my adventures," but she still wants them, which is amazing, isn't it?
Well, you've just been on a cruise, haven't you?
Yes, and she's just today renewed her passport.
Hey, brilliant. Yeah.
So she's optimistic of many, many, many more years of adventures for her. So I had that interesting background. My dad was a product of Featherston. He was nice. He was quite placid. My mother was the leader of the pack, really, and she got me going. I had a few tennis lessons. And whatever I said I'd like to do, she'd always try to give me a leg up and get me a turn at it, you know, to see whether, you know, I want to go to Brownies. She got me to Brownies. Not everybody did, you know.
No.
People in my circle, their parents, for whatever reason, didn't get their kids to Brownies, Scouts, Girl Guides. I always felt fortunate like that, you know, that I had those opportunities.
But I think a lot of older women come from that matriarchy of people who were denied the opportunities and you were seen and not heard and you just got on with your life and there wasn't really as strong a role for them as there is nowadays. She must be incredibly proud with how you seize every opportunity that's coming your way.
Yes, she does, and she accompanies me quite a lot to things. For example, coming up this week, I've got I'm giving a talk to the ladies who are optimists. I could take a guest, so instead of taking my husband, I asked my mum to come along because I know she'd be really interested, and she always chips in. She's always got something to comment on, something to correct me on sometimes, you know.
Oh, that's the mum's role. That's the mum's role. I do that with my daughter and she just rolls her eyes now.
And my daughters, of course, I've got two of those, if you know. And I was really delighted to get girls. Really delighted.
Why was that?
Well, my first daughter, it was probably because I got married when I was 16, first time round. And that...
Gosh, that was that very
ended,
young.
I mean, very, very young. It ended amicably, but nonetheless, you know, it happened. And I was then alone and I managed to get myself a mortgage. So by the time I was 18, I was sort of getting divorced. I've got a mortgage. I worked in Barclays Bank and everything was like set, if you like.
How difficult was it being a divorcee in those days?
Do you know, I didn't anticipate any issues. I did the divorce myself.
Really?
Well, yeah, because we found out that it was to get a solicitor involved, it was going to cost like quite a bit of money, obviously, which we didn't have. And nor did it, if I'd had it, I wouldn't want to spend it. If I can do it myself, I'll do it myself. So I found out, and it's like I was 18, possibly going up 19, but nonetheless very young. I found out that you could, by going along to certain office, you get the paperwork, you fill them in, and then we did it completely alone. I had to swear an affidavit in some office and I didn't even know what that was. I took a friend from work. I said, I've got to go and swear an affidavit. We were going, oh, what's that? And I don't know. Got to do it. You know, so I did a do-it-yourself divorce case. And then I went off to Greece for a holiday and decided that I fancied working out in Greece. So I sold my house and gave my job up. And that was quite shocking. So it wasn't difficult getting divorced, but I had a lot of... people concerned about this was quite radical.
Yes,
to do such
very.
A thing, to break out of that. But I did it anyway. I just didn't seem to worry about it.
You see, this is why you fit on this podcast, Retirement Rebel, Life After 60. You sound like you've always been a rebel, and I love that.
I think I might have been, Siobhan, you know, but you don't always analyse yourself, do you? You just do what comes to you. Like I say, instinctive action, I think, oh, yeah, that's... You know, I don't act on every tiny little whim because that would be... But if I've got a real gut, if it's really, really calling, I'll follow where it takes me to, really. So coming back to children, yes. So I went to work in Greece for a bit with Met Stavros, of course. That was very...
Of course you did.
Of course I did.
Shirley Valentine.
Yeah. And I have a daughter from that relationship, but it didn't work out for us. Tried over a number of years, backwards and forwards, but... I brought her up alone for a few years. So I was glad I had a girl, you know, because I felt powerful and I felt able to relate. I knew about a girl. I thought, I know what to do somehow.
I know exactly what you mean, because I ended up being a single mum from my daughter being 4 and a half, and I've brought her up on my own ever since. I mean, she's 35 now. Although I say to her, I brought you up on my own and all this, and she goes, I'll give you till I was about 9.
Yeah.
And then she reckons she's brought herself up.
She dragged herself up.
Yeah. But I know what you mean. That bond between a mother and daughter when you're a single mum is very special, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And people used to call us the gang of two because although I worked from her being quite a small baby, and I was really fortunate that I got help with that from neighbours and family, because there wasn't any, you didn't get any financial help. You were either on the... on benefits or you weren't. There was no middle ground to help you achieve. So I did get some help and I was blessed really with that. And those people imprinted upon my oldest daughter so much, you know, grandparents and that were very, very important there. But nonetheless, it was of an evening, you know, it was she and I. And that went on for a number of years until I re-met John. It's a story for another day, that. But I met John and we got together and I had another daughter. And people said, oh, I bet you're a bit disappointed that you haven't had a son. I said, not at all, Noah. I really, really like girls. And I'm absolutely sure if I'd got a son, that would be just the same. And I, so should it be.
they must be incredibly proud of you as well, because on from being on the Bake Off, you actually have done your own cookery book, haven't you?
This was just last year. Yeah, I wrote a book. It's got recipes in it. There's 30 recipes. It's not baking. I just didn't want to do baking because that's quite a static thing. And you've got to have your sensible head on, you know, because you've got to weigh and measure and be all grown up about it. And I like to throw in pinches of that and a stir of that. And you know, I'm a bit chaotic, really.
But I think a lot of us are. That's why I think it's such an amazing book. But you actually went on a trip in a motorhome, didn't you, to write the book. And that's where our paths crossed, because me living in my motorhome and you sort of went on this motorhome trip and put together this cookery book. And then we both are working for the Caravan and Motorhome Club. But I'm fascinated by how you put that book together yourself and published it yourself. Because it is, what's it called? Meals on the Move?
It's Meals on the Move, subtitle, A Campsite Cooking Journey. It's a book about the journey that we took last June. So it covers just 30 days of my life. And it's done in like a Dear Diary format. Because I knew that going on a trip, just John and I, although we know each other like inside out now, there are certain challenges, you know, going off really, that I knew that could impact us really in a longer trip, in a small, confined-ish sort of space. So I decided I would see how I went and I'd write about it. I wrote a diary entry per day. I did a recipe per day. I did loads and loads and loads, like over 200 photographs that I took on my mobile phone camera. And I can't believe, again, I think, Siobhan, that's another of my so far favourite achievements, because when I was thinking about writing this book, I didn't know the first thing about how to do it, who would edit it, I didn't know. I took advice from a good friend of ours, really, Sammy Faircloth. She told me who she'd used and how it worked for her. So I'd got the nuts and bolts of it going on, but I didn't know. I thought, how do you get photographs? Because we can't take a food photographer with us, clearly. So I thought, well, it's down to you, Karen. You need to find out how to get really cracking, expert-looking photographs. And I did it.
This is what I love about you. You just get on with it.
Yeah, well, when you've got to, you have to. When you have to, you can. You can make things happen. You'll know. There's only one person can choose that for you, and that's yourself. You can take advice and help, but the bottom line is, you decide.
Yeah, when I get overwhelmed with things sometimes and I think I can't, I sit down and I calm down and then I think, you've got to. There's only you. Get on with it. Find a way. And I do. And every time I do, I think the next obstacle that comes, I think, you can do this.
You become empowered, Siobhan, don't you? I've discovered recently that my husband, John, I used to always rely on him to do all things technical in the house, you know. Mm. So like a smart TV would come in the house and I'd assume that he would just, you know, he just got on with it.
Yeah.
And latterly, for various reasons, that's not happening. And I found that I'm having to take on tasks that I used to think that I can't do that, you know, self-limiting. I can't do maths. They told me at school I was no good at maths. I believed them. They're not right. They weren't right, but I believed what they said. I can't do technology because it's a man thing. It's not.
I know. This is what is the problem. We listen to what we're told. And actually, when you have to get on and do it and you get on and do it, that you realise that that's nonsense.
It's correct that, and I do take great pleasure then. So when, say, the television needs tuning into something because the internet's gone off and things, I will investigate and realise. Then I think, it wasn't that hard. I've always thought that was hard, and look, I can do that. And then it's like a tick, that's something else I know how to do now. It's brilliant to be an independent person. Yeah. At the end of the day, you know, that's what we all are.
Yeah, what would you say to your younger self, seeing what you're achieving, what you're doing in your 60s and looking forward to your 70s, 80s, 90s and beyond?
You know, Siobhan, what I would say is that I wished I'd had the insight about the limiting beliefs, really. I think that's come up to me quite late in life, that a lot of the things that I've carried with me have been put there by other people, and that we gather it. It's so easy done. I mean, we all, you know, we can all fall victim to planting ideas in susceptible minds, you know. But one example is, my dad always told me when I was about 4 or 5 years old, I'm clear memory of him saying, Karen, you're tone deaf, love. You can't hold a note. You can't sing. You can't sing. And I because it was my dad, of course, I believed him, and it went all through my life that I couldn't sing, so I wouldn't sing. So I didn't, when I went to do piano lessons, they came to an abrupt halt because when it came to singing the scales, I cried because I couldn't, it's too embarrassing, it's my voice, oh, no way, and so on. And it took me till I was 60, and I was on the break-off, right? And basically, I sang on television out of nowhere. I broke my own spell. I think it was just like
fantastic.
A moment of madness. Yeah, I piped some words on a cake collar of a folk song. And Noel Fielding said, you know, what's this? I said, oh, it's song lyrics. A song, can you sing? I went, let me show you. And I sang. And you know, I can sing. 60 years. I had that limiting belief that was put on me by an unsuspecting dad. He didn't mean it. He didn't think about that. It just, you know, you tell your kids, oh, you know, you've got two left legs, you'll never be able to dance. You know. Things like that. And it can stick with you and make you feel awkward around things. So I think it would be that beliefs aren't necessarily truths. So what you can believe, you know, I believe I can't sing, but is it the truth? Probably not. And there's another saying that I'd like to have put in my own brain years ago. I think Henry Ford said this, but it's so true for me. If you think you can, you will. And if you think you can't, you won't. You're probably right. It's what you think. If you think you can do it, you can. And if you think you're not going to be able to, then you will never do it, will you? So just to get that positive. I mean, I've always been positive, but I have carried with me some baggage. And I think I'd like to have dispelled that at an earlier age.
No, I think it's brilliant. You've got it in bucket loads. But what I also think is that women like you and me who are going there and pushing the boundaries and exploring and having our adventures and speaking out positively and challenging those self-limit beliefs are helping other women to change the way we see aging, because we are an ageist society, aren't we?
Yes, we are an ageist society, but I was thinking about my upcoming birthday quite a bit, because I'm going to be 66 in less than two months. And at 66 in this country, you get your state pension. And I was thinking about that with glee, thinking, hurrah, something to celebrate. Wow, lucky me, six. I've got my pension, it's coming in, I'm in the prime of my life, because I see myself as having lots more adventures and fun things and positive things to do. And that money's going to be great to have. I know that if you'd take me back 20 years ago, I would have not been looking forward to it.
Yeah.
I would have been thinking, oh, crumbs, you know, when you get your pension, you're going to be really old and blah, 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 blah. I don't see it that way. I think it's a time of great joy. Most of my friends, you get a friend group all of a similar age, and pretty largely we're all, I've got a very positive attitude to our future, really, and whatever it might bring.
I absolutely love your positive outlook on life, and I do hope that more of us are getting that outlook. You know, that feeling about getting old, that it's not something that's slowing down, that's negative, that's scary. It's actually, like you say, the prime of your life. There's years and years and years ahead of us, all God willing, you know.
God willing. I mean, who knows? But like using my mum as an example again, you know, she's 90 in 3 weeks' time, and she's just put in for her passport again. And she's, because she's going to be going abroad, and she's going to be having adventures and trips, and she's planning, and she's optimistic, and she's out there, and she's buzzing around the local town and getting things done. She gets all the papers in. She's ringing things. Oh, she's just like a machine of optimism. But practicalities, you know, she's got all the things in place, and she's not worried. She's not worried about the inevitable end. She said, whatever, but I'm going to get as much out of life as I possibly can. And, you know, with a mother like that, I'm bound to be following in her footsteps.
What an incredible role model. Now, there's one question that I ask everybody. I've absolutely loved chatting with you on this podcast. And there's one question that I ask everybody, and that is, I want to know, when's the last time that you have been really rebellious and felt like a rebel?
I felt like a rebel about 3 weeks ago. You know, when you and I were going up to Glasgow, because we went up to work together, didn't we? And it's a longish journey from where we live here in Yorkshire. And my husband is quite a negative Nelly, really. And he kept saying, he can't, well, he is. He's the opposite of me. I'll pull his leg about it. But nevertheless, some of the serious things. And he kept moaning about our car. And he kept saying, oh, well, you know, we might not get there at this rate. That bloody car is getting old a bit. And then one day, out of the blue, we were in the phone shop. And I said to the person I was talking to just in passing, oh, well, I'm going up to Glasgow next week. And John piped up. It was a Friday morning. He piped up, well, if that car gets us there. So when we came out of the shop, I just got rebellious. And I said, right, take me to that car lot that we bought this car from that we've got now. Take me. He said, why? I said, you watch. And we drove down there and I went to the guy and he recognised us. He said, have you worn the old car out then? I said, we might have done. I said, I'm here to see if you've got a replacement. I want something that's large enough to take all my clobber because I'll take a lot of things, my books and all the rest of it with me. And I want something that's strong enough to tow a caravan. Ideally, already has a tow bar fitted. Have you got anything in this car lot to match that? And he said, oh, let me have a look. Well, we've got this one here. I said, oh, it's a nice colour. Tell you what, we'll have it. He says, you don't want to test drive it? I said, no, we'll have it. I said, I'll give you a deposit now. Can we pick it up on Monday? He said, yeah, it's a done deal. And that was that. And I just thought,
I love that.
Yes, because I was so fed up of listening to all that. I just thought, I'm going to do something about it. And I did. And it's all worked out great. Why wouldn't it have done? Fabulous.
But don't you think there's that incredible feeling when you know you're being rebellious?
I knew I was being a bit naughty. I mean, John just, I mean, he drove me there. He could have said no, but I think he was astonished himself. It all just happened. You make things happen, Siobhan. You make things happen.
Do you think as well, the older you get, the more you decisive you are about making things happen and feeling stronger about making things happen? Making the decisions.
Yes, I think when you're younger, perhaps you're a little bit maybe less thoughtful and maybe couldn't be considered reckless. But with the wisdom that you gain, and of course, that's one of the great benefits of getting older. You know, you've got all life's lessons that you know behind you to draw upon, and it gives you wisdom. And I think there's a certain inevitability, really, isn't it? That as I've got older, I think, what's the worst that can happen in the car scenario? So I make a bad decision. So I'll buy a dud. It's not the end of my world. It is just a car. Let's go with it and see what rolls, you know. I think it's great. It's exciting. I feel excited by having those choices to make, those options, those paths to walk, the things in front, really, the choice, because we all have choices and, you know, it's up to us to make them.
Mm. Have you got any more trips planned in a motorhome?
I've got a trip planned in the motorhome and that is exciting again. I love the anticipation of travel. Mm. I love it. And so we're going to France in June again and I've got ideas about that and maybe I'll make some notes book-wise, I don't know. But I want to get off in my caravan before that. And I was actually thinking this morning where to go. Fancy learning how to make chocolates, you see. So this is something else.
Oh, I thought, that's interesting.
Well, you know, you see a beautiful chocolate, especially Easter time, the good ones, you know, shiny, glossy.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like a magpie looking and thinking beautiful things. And my mind works like this. Oh, they're beautiful. I wonder how you make those then? So now I think, well, let me find out. I know somebody in Scarborough that will teach me, a professional chocolatier. What a good idea. Let's take our caravan to Scarborough. I've been for years. We'll park up there. I'll have my lesson. I'll have a day out, you know. And I'm hoping to bring that off.
That sounds like a good television series. You need to pitch that one. I'd watch that.
Yeah, well, it does, doesn't it? Yeah. Gosh, never thought about that, Siobhan. Thank you for that idea.
My pleasure. Well, you know, you've got to keep going in your 60s and your 70s. I just love that. I love, like I say, your positive outlook on life. And I've thoroughly enjoyed chatting to you today on the podcast. And just keep going. Keep being who you are. Keep being an inspiration to other women and a trailblazer. Thanks so much, Karen, for joining me.
Thank you, Siobhan. I've absolutely loved it.
I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Karen Wright. Her 5 weeks on the Great British Bake Off in her 60s really did give her a new outlook on life, and she was a joy to chat to. I'll take away from our conversation that pushing yourself out of your comfort zone really can reap rewards. If Karen had just looked at the application form for the Great British Bake Off and thought, well, I only know five things, her life could have been totally different. But she didn't. She thought, how difficult can it be to teach yourself all the methods that they want you to know when you're baking for the competition? And so she just set to it and taught herself. I also learned that she's had a lifelong relationship with going away in caravans and vans, and that's something she's taking into her old age. It's led her to write her own cookery book, Meals on the Move. Again, she didn't believe that she was too old or it was too late. She just decided, I'm going to write my first book. And she just did it and published it herself. And we just need to say yes more to things. I'll also take away from our discussion that it really is never too late to rekindle the rebellious side of yourself. Karen realised that she was quite rebellious when she was younger, when she went off to Greece, and she's actually relishing the feelings of rebelliousness now. And of course, you all know this platform on this podcast is to get together my tribe of rebellious people. So it was a joy to talk to her, and I'm looking forward to talking to a lot more rebels out there in their 60s, 70s, 80s and beyond. Thank you so much for joining me on today's Retirement Rebel Life After 60. I'm truly grateful for your time and your willingness to embark on this journey with me. If today's conversation sparked something within you, or if you've your own rebel story to share, I'd love to hear from you. Please reach out through our social media channels or email, and let's keep the conversation going. Email us on podcast@retirementrebel.co.uk. And remember, if you found value in our time together today, consider sharing this episode with a friend who might also enjoy and benefit from our Retirement Rebel community. Spreading the word helps us grow and continue to challenge the narrative around life after 60. All of our details can be found on retirementrebel.co.uk. Retirement Rebel Life After 60 is written and hosted by me, Siobhan Daniels, and produced by the incredibly talented Matt Cheney. Join me again next week for another episode. Until then, keep embracing your inner rebel and living life to the fullest. Bye for now.